Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
So we're going to be talking about Woman of Horror, and our guest is Amy Grech. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. Thrilled to be here.
So, Amy, you've never been on the show, so for listeners' first time hearing you, where did Amy come from, and how did Amy get into writing and such a dark category, too?
Absolutely. Well, I was raised on Long Island and moved to New York City in my 20s. I've lived in the city for 25 years, but because of COVID right now, I'm back on Long Island, but want to move back to the city in the summer. And how did I get into horror? There were a couple of influences. I was raised Catholic, so a lot of those Bible stories are downright terrifying, right? And
absolutely.
And when I was visiting an aunt with my family who lives in Kingston, New York, she handed me a Stephen King novel. I was 12 at the time, and she handed me Cujo and Pet Sematary. And she said, "Oh, honey, I think you'll love this author." And so, you know, I took the books and thanked her, and I started with Pet Sematary, and then Cujo, and I never liked big dogs before Cujo, but then that after reading Cujo, that kind of solidified it.
And those are very dark books.
They are, but I was always mature for my age. So my parents didn't say anything like, "Oh, that's not a good idea," you know.
My parents wouldn't let me watch Hogan's Heroes. I mean,
oh, really?
Jeez. Bummer. I don't know. So, but there has to be a point where, you love the horror, you're reading it, and you like it, but mm-hmm. what is the point in your mind or in your life that you go, "Well, I want to write this"? Like, that's a difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of people that read a lot of these different books, but they never write it, get into the writing. So what got you into that?
Sure. I've always had an overactive imagination, so that was in my favor. And after reading a couple of Stephen King's novels, I said to myself, you know, why don't I try my hand at this? And so I started in high school, writing out stories longhand. And then I got a typewriter my junior year of high school. I'm dating myself, but, you know, computers were not all the rage quite yet. They were starting to be. And I thought to myself, you know, there are not a lot of women writing horror that are alive at the time. This was in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s. And so that sort of was the catharsis, if you will, for me seriously trying to write. And then after a couple of years of doing it, getting starting out getting form rejections back in the old days where you had to mail your manuscript and do the self-addressed stamped envelope. And then I started getting more personalized rejections. So, you know, again, that was encouraging. And just sort of went from there. And I've been writing ever since.
So now who is it that you look for when you're writing? Like what kind of what type of horror are you trying to write?
Well, that's a good question. My muse does not discriminate. I have published horror, sci-fi, hybrid stories, extreme horror, psychological horror, ghost stories. It partly depends on what's going on in my life at the time, because it's not... The plots of my stories are not my life, you know, like word for word per se, but there are definitely some influences, you know, maybe people I know at the time, boyfriend I had at the time who, you know, might have broken up with me and I didn't quite get over it, didn't take it very well. So I channeled that into my writing.
So you're killing the people you don't like. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, like many other horror writers I know. Yes, exactly.
Absolutely.
It's very cathartic and it's legal.
Got any bodies laying around the house that we should know about? That's a...
I don't kiss and tell. No.
she's got the acid bath going on, you know. Just old horror influence you more? Like, what if I was to give you a choice between horror from, let's say, the 40s, 50s, and 60s as compared to what it's been like in the 2000s, do you have a preference?
And by preference, do you mean which has influenced me more as an author person?
Yeah, which do you think feeds you more as an author? Like, is it kind of the old time stories done by classics, or is it kind of more modern day?
Well, I would say that it's kind of a mix for me. Of course, Frankenstein, Mary Shelley, Shirley Jackson, The Lottery, H.P. Lovecraft. Interesting tidbit, I had the same birthday as Lovecraft, August 20th, different centuries. But then, as I mentioned, I read a lot of Stephen King growing up, and then I discovered other authors, Dean Koontz, and then contemporary women of the genre, Joyce Carol Oates, I would even consider a horror author, even though a lot of her work is very contemporary, for example.
Absolutely.
So are you H.P. Lovecraft reincarnated?
No, I'm not. I'm not, I'm not a racist. I'm not. No.
Well, you know, maybe a modern day version. I know very little about him. I started listening to him just this last, I'd say in the last year, last 8 months. I'd never read or any of that stuff before. And it's fascinating. I find it very, I like it for the most part.
Uh-huh. So, it is fascinating. The Cthulhu mythos. Actually, where I went to undergrad college, Ithaca College, I was an English major, creative writing minor, no surprise. But I mention it because one of the elective courses was the literature of horror. So that's where I discovered Franz Kafka, The Metamorphosis, H.P. Lovecraft, Call of the Cthulhu, and others So I was fortunate that that was something available to me at another, still an impressionable age, late teens, early 20s.
Well, that's interesting, but because you talk about some of these classics, do you think that we have those types of classics being written now?
Yes, I would say that we have modern day equivalents. Talking about Lovecraft, Lovecraft Country. I don't know if you saw that series on HBO.
No,
but
I haven't watched it yet.
No, it's really intense. I recommend it. I don't want to spoil it for you, but it's very, very multi-layered, like an onion, but in a good way.
I never had a good onion.
Well, just an analogy I like to give people. I actually don't really care to eat onions, but you know, it's one of those visual analogies that works, if you will.
Yeah.
Well, since we brought up Lovecraft, mm-hmm. And you've written, I think, over 100, well, published over 100 short stories.
Yes.
Do you feel more comfortable writing in the short form?
I do, but recently I have also published a couple of novellas. A couple of years ago, a small publisher, New Pulp Press, published a collection of mine that has two novellas. One is a crime novella, actually set in New York City, entitled Rage, Redemption, Alphabet City, which is also the title of the collection. And then for some reason, the publisher wanted a dystopian novella, which really didn't go with the rest. But that was fun to write. So I'm trying to stretch my my creativity and still create engaging characters and plot lines. So I'm getting there. I'm not adverse to writing a novel. I just haven't gotten there yet.
Excellent.
So when you talk about, now this is, I see you're in that, the one that got away, and it's Woman of Horror, yes. Volume 3. So now this is something fairly new to me. Explain what is Woman of Horror and what are you guys accomplishing by doing these, compilations of books?
Sure. Women in Horror Month has been around for 12 years, and it started as a way to just celebrate women who are successful, whether it's their authors or their filmmakers or screenwriters. And for some reason, they picked February. February is kind of a crowded month. We have Valentine's Day. We have Black History Month. So there's actually talk in the genre of moving it to a different month. I mean, every month is Women in Horror Month as far as I'm concerned.
That's right.
But the anthology that you mentioned is actually all female authors published, and it's a press. I might be saying the name of the press incorrectly. It's Kandasha Press. And it's run by women as well, so it's a lot of girl power at once.
What do you think it is? Do you think that is there an issue with people believing a woman can write a good horror?
Not so much anymore, because I touched upon an article that I wrote for StokerCon, the StokerCon souvenir book in 2019. Linda Addison was editing it that year, and I emailed her. We've been friends for years, and I said, Linda, I'd love to write up an essay about the trials and tribulations of being a woman in horror and persevering and being successful. And she loved the idea. And then about a year and a half later, I found this platform called Medium Online, which it's monetized, so you get money when people, it's the equivalent of liking something, it's clapping on that platform. So I keep updating the essay. It's called Dangerous Dames, Women Who Write Horror, because there's over 200 women worldwide now publishing, whether it's short stories, novellas, novels, poems. So it's really, I don't want to say it's become mainstream yet, but I don't really think people are adverse to picking up a book, or even, like, for example, the one that got away, Anthology, we have 9 5-star reviews on Amazon already, and it came out about a month ago. So I think people are really embracing women in the horror genre even more now.
No, okay, no, don't take this wrong, but does a woman write differently than a man in horror, or is that just a totally off-base question?
No, it's a perfectly valid question, and I've been on a couple of panels at different conventions where we talked about it live in real life, and so on the podcast here, what I would say to that is women are usually by nature, I don't want to say all women, but most women are more attuned to emotions and conveying emotions within their work, whether it's intense emotions of joy that turn into to grief for whatever reason, if that helps.
Yeah, I was just, yeah, because I'm not, see, I'm from the true crime area, and uh-huh. that's what I write. So
cool.
I don't really notice, I don't know if there's a difference in female writing or not as compared to male. Maybe there is, but because we're writing kind of, we don't get to choose what we write. It's sort of the fact that you're portraying, I guess, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So, and I think not so much the writing itself, but maybe a different story. Like, I don't know. I'm probably going to get hate mail for this, but what I'm trying to figure out is do you have a different story? As a man, like, is that just like, can you read, like, if I read The One That Got Away, if I'm reading that, mm-hmm. Oh boy, see, that's, so I don't get screamed at, but does that, would I know I'm reading females writing stories? And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. I'm not trying to be mean or mm-hmm. try to be that stuff, but do you guys, does a female write from a different point of view in a story?
I think by and large that we do, but actually some of the contributors to the anthology are transgender and they identify as female. And I haven't had a chance to read the entire anthology yet, but I did read a piece by one of the transgender authors, and it still resonated as being written by a female, I don't want to say mindset, but like a female perspective, from a female perspective.
Hmm. Yeah, it's all very new to me.
Mm-hmm.
So when you put together a story, like when you're writing a story, one of your stories,
mm-hmm.
where does that come from?
Like, there's a lot of different influences. A lot of my work takes place in New York City because I've lived there for over 25 years. And
here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
One winter, it was snowing, and I was walking through Central Park with a friend, and so that's actually the setting of my story, Cold Comfort, which appears in the One That Got Away anthology. And in that story, I also deal with grieving over a boyfriend I had in college who actually I thought we were going to get married, and he didn't feel the same way. So I wrote him up as a guy who is in a relationship in the story, but, you know, he wants to explore other experiences with other women. So he hooks up with this woman at a bar, and she's really kinky, and she takes him home and ties him up. And then there's a lot of fun stuff I do with rope, and not just in the bedroom. I don't want to ruin the story, but there's quite a twist that a lot of people who read the story didn't see coming, which is always satisfying.
So when you do a story, but is there an underlying thing that you want people to get from the story?
Yeah, but I'm not conscious of it necessarily when I'm writing it until after I've finished the story, and then I go back. I try to write the first draft almost stream of consciousness, and then I go back. I let it sit for like a week or two or maybe longer, and then I go back to it, and I'll edit it for logic issues and things like that. So it's, for me, it's not even obvious what the message is of the story until I've spent some time with it.
And your characters, like when you have somebody in there, are they people that you totally make up in your mind? Is it people you've met in a coffee shop? Someone, I mean, obviously your ex-boyfriend, you want to kill him, but but besides that, I mean, the different characters in your story, where do they come from, and how do you know how they're going to act and react? You see, that's kind of the difference for me. You see, because in true crime, we kind of get the facts and we know, okay, this guy did this to this person, and we kind of know what they did and how they reacted. And we probably ask the question, I wonder why they reacted this way. But in your story, so how do you, because you're creating that complete storyline, how do you know what your characters are going to do.
For me, actually, like you were saying, I have written some crime stories and novellas that have been published, and they are kind of different because I sort of start with like what was the crime, and then I work backwards like what led up to it. That's my methodology with the crime fiction that I write. But my horror, I'm along for the ride. It's almost like when I'm writing it, it's like I'm watching a movie, but I don't know what's going to happen until it sort of happens in real time and I'm along for the ride.
Okay. Yeah. I find that a fascinating part of writing, and I guess mm-hmm. horror is no different than anything else. Do you want people to get something out of your writing? Like, so if I sit down and I'm reading the one that got away, and I'm reading the different compilations and the stories, and I get to your story and I read it. Mm-hmm. Do you want me to have, is there something you want me to get out of that story at the end of the book?
Yeah, I want the story to resonate with the readers long after they've finished and they're uneasy because maybe they, either they live in New York City or they visit and they have walked through Central Park during a snowstorm in the winter. And now the next time that happens, they're going to be looking over their shoulder and they're going to be wondering if what happened in the story might possibly happen to them. So yeah, to sort of evoke a feeling of dread that wasn't there in their real lives.
Well, so you want people to suffer?
Well, I want them to, but it's sort of like comfortable suffering because they're not going to be physically injured directly from reading my stories, unless they get a paper cut. Actually, if they're reading that paperback.
Well, that could be a good thing too, right?
Yeah.
Wow. So that's really interesting. So where do you see yourself going with all this?
Well, I've got a lot of stories that I'm currently working on. I'm putting the finishing touches on a second crime novella that I have written that's set in New York City. It was with a publisher for a year. I won't say who, but I will say that the terms of the contract ran out. Their year was up. The contract was they had a year to publish my novella, and then they didn't. So I asked for my rights back, and they gave them back to me. I mean, my muse doesn't discriminate. I have a poem in an anthology that just came out a few weeks ago that's called Hell's Malls. It's different stories set in suburban or urban malls, and all kinds of mayhem ensues. And my poem is entitled Orange Julius, so it's you know, very 80s. And then I go back in my mind to all the stores that were in malls in the 80s, KB Toys and Walden Books. And I don't want to ruin the surprise of the poem, but I'll just say that there's a disgruntled employee who sort of has a field day in the mall.
Well, it's funny. Orange Julius, I remember that in the 60s.
Yes. Well, I grew up in the 80s, so you can still get them at Dairy Queen, at least in New York City. So, but it's not a standalone brand anymore. Right. I guess Dairy Queen absorbed them or something.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of that with those fast food places. They seem to be joining up. I guess it's split the rent and sell your stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. So if someone, okay, so we're talking Amy Grett, and someone say, well, what should I read? I've never read Amy before. So what do you suggest? So what would be the thing you would say represents you most for?
Well, it would depend on what that individual likes. For example, I have a science fiction horror hybrid story, EV 2000, that was published in a publication called Tales from the Canyons of the Damned. It came out last summer of 2020. You know, it really depends. This, or maybe there's someone else who likes ghost stories. I have quite a few of those that have been published. One takes place in a castle. So it all depends on the reader's preference.
Well, and who would you, besides me, who would you most like to work with? If you would you like to work with another writer, or is there somebody you'd love to work with?
Oh boy. excuse me. Yeah, I actually did collaborate with an author in the mid 2000s, Michael McCarthy. He's published a lot of books and short stories. And we wrote this novella, and it was called Fallen Angel, and it got pretty decent reviews, but then the publisher folded, and we didn't do anything with it to try to get it out there again. But that was a fascinating process, collaborating and getting our voices to mesh, so the reader couldn't tell who wrote this chapter. Was it Amy or was it Michael? So it's something I would be open to again, but, I would be open to working with any author if I feel our voices would mesh effectively, but I can't think of any, I don't want to put any of the other writers out there on the spot, if you will.
Yeah. So, okay. Now, okay. Do you have a website or a place people can go and find you and find out about you and your writing and all the information, maybe stalk you, maybe send you a mail for a date, they have to be careful. You don't treat them well.
That's right. I do have a website. It's crimsonscreams.com. And I'm also very active on Twitter. And on Twitter, my handle is just Amy_Greck.
Fantastic. Okay, so we're going to have that on our website as well. So people that are listening to this or listening, they can do one click and they can find you and ask you out on a date or whatever.
At their own peril, yes.
At their own, well, as long as they treat you good, it's okay. Okay.
That's right.
It's just when they get into the bad stuff.
But they will be killed in the story.
Yeah, yes. Well, it might even go further. You never know. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, she's in New York. I mean, come on. Yeah. Now, with all the weird stuff and being in such a busy center, like being around New York and all that stuff, has the COVID and all of this last year of 2020, has that caused you a lot of stress, and does that kind of get into your writing? Does that fuel you to write even more?
Let me backtrack really briefly. Right before the pandemic, I had severe gallstones. So I had my gallbladder out like two weeks before New York City was under lockdown.
Oh, wow.
And and my day job, I'm a full-time freelance digital strategist. I do online marketing for various clients, but a lot of them couldn't work, like doctors. I worked with a cosmetic surgeon and he couldn't perform procedures because they weren't, like essential surgeries, like saving someone's life with a heart operation. So, everything kind of stopped for me at once, and I was unfortunate that my mother has a house on Long Island, and that's where I am right now, but I'm able to be more creative because I don't, people don't have to go places the way we used to, and don't get me wrong, I miss it horribly, being able to go out with my friends for dinner, go see a movie, Broadway show. I won't list all the litany of things that we can't do anymore right now. But yeah, I do find myself being extra creative and really cranking out, like I said, some poems. And I actually sold a 6-word story to an online publication. I signed the contract, but I'll say keep an eye on my website for the announcement, the official announcement for that.
Well, that's great.
I don't have a publication date for that one yet. Mm-hmm.
No, that's great. That's really
good.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, no, and but do you find like when things around you in your life are dark, or let's say, you know, the boyfriend who's being an ass and all that stuff, does that make you kind of go darker in your writing?
Oh yeah, absolutely. When I have fuel from my real life, whether it's something like a bad breakup, or right now I consider myself to be displaced and living in exile in the suburbs. I'm not wired for the suburbs. I don't drive. I walked to the drugstore earlier to pick up a few things, and drivers look at me like I'm a unicorn because I'm not driving and I'm walking on the shoulder of the road.
Well, you know, but you know, that's how it is, right? Each area has their own sort of thing, and you know, just finger them. Just show them the finger. That's all.
Yeah. Well, no, because I won't say this is like the Deep South where people have rifle racks, but you never know who's got a weapon. So I don't want some wackadoo to really pull a gun on me in real life. You know, it's fine. I've written a bunch of stories with different guns, and actually I've done my homework, because once I wrote a story and the gun that I referenced didn't have a safety on it. And then someone said, yeah, you need to change the gun, or you need to rewrite that. Someone who knew about guns. So I learned that, you know, don't take research lightly. Do your homework, because someone's going to call you out on details, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No,
details like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, well, I think it's the most important thing. The worst thing in the world is a story that gets detail wrong. When that happens, it throws me.
Uh-huh.
And that doesn't matter what kind of story, whether it's fiction, nonfiction, it can be horror, it can be anything. I mean, you know, Wonder Woman having an accent. And she didn't have one.
The new movie that just came out.
Yeah, she has an accent, and yet when she's a kid, she doesn't have an accent.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah. That throws me. So here I am getting bothered and trying to figure it out throughout the whole thing, and I miss it all because I'm so worked up.
Exactly. Okay?
So that really bothers me when they do that. There's so many things. So it's really important. I think it's the most important thing to a story is those details.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. The devil is in the details, to coin a phrase.
Yeah, because what was that? That was that other one, that Nurse Ratched show. Uh-huh. And the thing is, and how they were talking about the electric chair and all that, but they had never done electrocutions at that time.
Oh, see, I didn't know that. I did watch Nurse Ratched on Netflix last year when it was out. But
I can see
where that could be irritating if one didn't know that was a big whoopsie-daisy on their part.
Yeah. No, and that's things like that, or if you're in that true crime area, you start to realize, and you go, well, it couldn't be. So they didn't, somebody didn't check, and so it becomes part of the story, and then you're kind of like, oh. Mm-hmm. So it throws you a little bit. I mean, I still liked it, but that did throw me, you know, it could, you know, but.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly.
But anyway, well, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
We'll have you back again. Anything exciting happens, let us know.
I will. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure, and stay safe. Take care.
Thanks, Amy.
All right, thank you.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.